Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This episode is brought to you in part by Purina. Purina is dedicated to creating richer lives for pets and the people who love them. From helping older pets think like their younger selves to making cat ownership a possibility for more people than ever, Purina is helping pets thrive so they can live long, healthy, and happy lives. Purina has you covered for all your furry friends' needs, whether they meow or bark. From litter to treats to their best-in-class, nutrient-packed food with taste your pets will love, Purina's got your back at every stage of your pet's life. Your pet gives you the joy of the spring sunshine all year round. So today and every day, care for your pet with Purina. Your pet is Purina's passion. To learn more, head to amazon.com/Purina.
From the halls of assembly, you'll hear us scream and shout. Our love of Indiana is manic and devout. Everything I do, we discuss in unique manner. We won't be satisfied until we hang another banner. Us two goofy guys go by names of Ward and Eric. And as you probably know by now, we're Hoosier Hysterics. Hoosier Hysterics. Hoosier Hysterics.
Hello, Ward.
Hello, Eric.
Well, we're doing something a little different today. You know, our last podcast, I mentioned in the intro that I just felt compelled to say something about what was going on in Israel. And I did it out of just kind of a personal compulsion. You know, it is ever present in my life because I'm Jewish and I have a cousin who lives in Israel. My aunt and uncle have split their time for many years now between Israel and the United States. And I just felt like I should say something, but I did feel weird about it because it wasn't directly connected to what we do here. And I appreciate you giving me the time to say something. And there've been tons of people out there who have sent messages to us, supportive messages, thankful messages, and they're overwhelming and humbling, and you know, we can't do anything here. Like, we just can't. I mean, we can give money, we can support, but we can't. It's a helpless feeling. And so I didn't like that feeling. And then I was having a conversation on text with our guest today and realized there is a direct connection, and felt like we both did that it made sense to talk to this guest and get their story. And you brought up some things when we were talking about why to do it that I thought, that I did not think of, but that I thought were really prescient and appropriate. Do you want to talk about some of that?
Well, as we got to interview all these wonderful players of the past, we learned collectively that they were dealing with so much more off the court than we ever could have known. You know, and it doesn't matter what decade, what coach, how good the team was or was not, we found more often than not, these players were dealing with things off the court, personal things, family things, that the average fan, certainly the average fan on Twitter, just doesn't take into consideration. And we felt like, wow, this is a paradigm shift that we need to keep and embrace. Now, as we get into talking with more present players, you know, sometimes it's still like maybe it's too soon or it's something they don't want to share. So I think that kind of comes and goes when it's appropriate or when a player or a coach wants to share what's going on off the court. But in a case like this, I think much as we found back in 2020, this is stuff that's affecting our players, in this case, one of our players, so dramatically and deeply that we wanted them to be able to share what is going on in their life right now that is so much more important than a game.
Yeah, I was in my head thinking about those things that we have learned, whether it was the Sherron Wilkerson interview or it was Kirk Hastin and what he went through with his family, or when we talked to Bruiser Flint and he told us some of the just kind of horrifying, just racial things, getting stopped by police, you know, things like that. And we've talked to people with severe injuries that never got reported. And we've talked to people that were going through drug abuse and substance abuse that was much more insidious than we knew. And in many cases, and I'll put my hand up and say I was one of them, some of these things you would hear about and they became like punchlines. You know, sure. They became like, well, no wonder this person didn't play well, or maybe they should focus more on X instead of Y. And then when you talk to them, you realize how much of an asshole you were for thinking those things or for trivializing what every human goes through. And we all know that we've all gone through something that affects our work, affects our relationships, affects our everyday just living. And so when you said that, it did make me think like, yeah, then this is right. And then you brought this up too, always more so the voice of reason than I am. Look, we know that right now for Indiana basketball, the biggest news in the world for that world is this recruitment story and these recruitment stories that are going on. And the big one is going to play out Sunday when Liam McNeely makes his announcement. And there has been just constant discussion, debate, overthinking, consternation, nervousness, anxiety. What'd you say?
Reading the tea leaves.
Yeah. And it becomes your everything. I'm so focused. I got to hit refresh so many times. And then you kind of brought that into also why it's important to do. I don't want to say important. That sounds too self-congratulatory. And I don't want to be that.
It's perspective.
Yeah, perspective. So yeah, please share that.
Well, I mean, it is. Look, I love that we can all go to the Pigs boards. We can hop on here. We can be on text threads and totally live and die by what some teenager may or may not do. Like, I think it is a healthy respite from all the responsibilities and burdens and troubles of the world to go into this place where, look, you know, there are real emotional stakes for all of us because of a lifetime of friends and family bonding over these teams. But you know, it's really going to temper, you know, anything you might want to consider bad news on Sunday or any kind of fallout from Sunday after having a conversation like the one we're about to have.
That's a good point. And, you know, I know you probably did not mean this, but when you said that we live and die by these things, which is true, I mean, it changes my mood. And then you realize there are people really living or dying by what's going on in the world. And that it's just right there. And it did have a direct connection to the Indiana University Hoosiers and someone who's part of our family and has been part of our family for more than a year now. And she was more than willing to come on and just share her story and talk a little bit about her perspective on this, which I think is more directly connected to what's happening in the greater world than you or I or many of the people who are bloviating on television are doing, because all that does is make you feel good for like a moment. But what is that? I mean, it's just like I'm trying to watch as much news as I can, but there comes a point when you're watching it where you realize, well, they're just doing this for ratings. Like, they are just doing this for money. And
absolutely.
And I'm not saying they're not upset about it, but like, there does seem to be a contest going on who can be more outraged than the next. And that game is unplayable because it defies what anybody here could think about it. I mean, there are real people and real families that are going through this. And we thought, let's talk to somebody who's more directly connected to that than any of us could ever be, and just ask some questions and get her perspective. So anything more you want to add before we get to it?
I don't think it's a conversation we would ever want to have. I don't think it's a conversation anybody wants to necessarily listen to. Nobody wants to have this conversation less than our guest, but that doesn't mean it's not really important to have the conversation and to listen and to understand. And I think for what we're doing here, to support this individual who is a part of our family and make her feel heard.
One thing I want to just say administratively, as you're listening to this or hopefully watching it at some point, is that the way we're going to do this is our guest today, because of how sensitive and emotional this content is, and because English is not her first language, she was a little concerned that she doesn't have the ultimate command of the English language to allow her emotion to totally be communicated in the right way. So we're going to try to let her speak in her native language. And we're going to have a translator translate that into English. And really the thought there was allow our guest to communicate in the best possible way and most natural way that they are able to. So that's what you're hearing. We'll introduce you to both the translator and our guest right after this. All right. Welcome, everybody. We are doing, as we said in the intro, a very different podcast today. And we are very honored to have our two guests. We have a translator here. Ronnie, you want to say hi to everybody?
Hi, everyone.
So full disclosure, Ronnie is the music instructor at my synagogue, which is how I met her, through my ex-wife, Mandy, who people listen to the podcast know very well. And we are bringing on someone directly connected to the events that are happening, as is Ronnie, and we can talk about that a little bit later. But I want to bring on someone who is from, I'm going to make sure I pronounce it right, Ra'anana?
Yes, Ra'anana.
Ra'anana, Israel.
Yes.
We know her because she was the all Big Ten second team selection last year. She was all Big Ten first team freshman team. She was Big Ten freshman of the week three times. She was the Tamika Catchings national freshman of the week once. She averaged 11 points, 5.3 rebounds, 3 assists, and shot 46% from three. She helped lead Indiana to a Big Ten championship. It's first in forever. It's first outright title ever and a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. We couldn't be more proud that she came from Israel to be part of Indiana. And we couldn't be more honored and honestly privileged that she decided to come on and talk to us. We are, of course, welcoming Yarden Garzon.
Hello. Happy to be here.
So, Yarden, can you tell us about growing up in Israel? What was it like growing up in your city?
אני חושב שזו הייתה ילדות די רגילה. בית, משפחה, יש לי שני הורים שאני מאוד מאוד אוהבת ומחוברת אליהם. אח גדול, אחות גדולה, אחות תאומה. התחלתי לשחק כדורסל בגיל מאוד צעיר. אני חושבת שזו הייתה ילדות מאוד מאוד רגילה.
She has quite a normal childhood. Two parents, two older siblings, one brother, one sister, a twin sister that she loves very much, her whole family, and she started playing basketball at a very young age.
Yarden, could you tell us how you came to find the game of basketball and start to realize that you were pretty good at it?
אבא שלי שחק כדורסל והיה בנבחרות ישראל. כשהוא היה צעיר יותר, אמא שלי שיחקה כדורעף וגם הייתה בנבחרות ישראל. המשפחה שלי מאוד ספורטיבית, אח שלי שיחק כדורסל, אחותי. ושהיינו קטנים שיחקנו את כל הענפי ספורט, עד שבאמת התחלתי לשחק כדורסל והתאהבתי בזה. ובסביבות
So Dennis coming from a very sportive family. Both her parents were playing at the national teams, right? Zaya,
yeah.
A national
team, mom for volleyball, yeah. My dad for basketball.
Both of her older siblings as well have been playing basketball.
So have you ever beaten your brother? Your brother's older, right? You ever beaten your brother one-on-one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. You would deny, but yeah.
What about your sister, though? Your sister can play, too. Who's the better baller between you and your sister?
I will answer in English.
Okay.
So, it's kind of a sensitive issue for us, because she's the older one. But I have to be, like, natural. I believe in myself. I believe in myself. Okay.
It's actually... we like that. We like that confidence.
Well, and how about, I think you found yourself now in a place that's pretty obsessed with basketball. How popular, how into basketball are Israelis as a whole? Has it really taken hold there? And is there that great passionate fan base there like you find in Bloomington?
Basketball is very popular in Israel, especially the men's basketball. But women's, it's not that popular. Women's basketball is not that popular. It's so different here when I'm coming and playing like in front of 17,000 sold out gym. And it's crazy. In Israel, I played like mostly in front of like families, member, friends, close friends. It wasn't nothing like that. So it's very different.
One of the things we were talking to Ronnie about before you came on was I was explaining to her how Bloomington, Indiana, the heart of the country, has embraced you. And I think a lot of the fact that you're from Israel, you see Israeli flags in the crowd. People bring Israeli flags, wearing Israel shirts. What has that meant to you to see that in Bloomington, Indiana?
Before I came here, I never expected for anything like that. I knew there are like a lot of Jewish people here, around like 4,000, but I didn't expect to meet like Israeli friends. Everyone really supportive Israel, most of the people at least. And being here in US, like far from my family, far from my home, it's hard sometimes because I'm far from them. And like seeing the crowd, people with Israel on their chest or Israeli flags, it gives me so much purpose to play the game.
Mm. I love that.
And I wonder there in the community, you know, whether other students from Israel or Jewish students from the United States, outside of basketball, is there a community there you've been able to connect with and find that feeling of belonging? Obviously you have it with the team as well, which is very special, but I know it's different.
Yeah, so we have in Indiana University, we have Hillel House and Chabad House, and they're both doing an amazing job in like gather everyone together. Especially I'm going especially for Chabad dinners in both, so I know they're doing a lot of other events to make sure everyone is together and gather everyone around the same table and make sure everyone knows each other. But I love going there for Shabbat dinners, especially because I'm so busy with basketball sometimes. Just going there for like in Friday dinner and see everyone and everyone really interested in basketball and what am I doing. So just see everyone and feel like home and everyone really understand each other in a different way. So it's very special for me.
I want to go back to your childhood and growing up. I think that, you know, there is a misperception among many Americans about what it's like growing up in Israel. Because the truth is, when you grow up in America, you hear about Israel when you hear about awful things. That is usually what makes the news. And it, unfortunately, it has been a fact of life for Israel, especially, you know, in your lifetime. The Palestinian-Israeli conflict has been a present thing your entire life. Do you remember a moment growing up, or maybe a couple moments, where that became a real thing to you? When did you have to confront that this was just part of your regular life?
I think the first time I really witnessed that was Tzuk Eitan. It was,
so they didn't call it a war. It was like an operation organized by the army. Yeah.
So I witnessed it. It was in 2014. So I was kind of young, but old enough to understand what's going on around me. And I realized that it's so hard to live in this kind of reality, that you feel safe because we have really strong army, but and they protect us, but on the other hand, you can't say you are totally safe, because you have to go to the shelter and you have to stay there and you hear the bombs above your head. And this is the moment I really, really understood. We are living in a different country than every country in the world, and we have to protect on ourselves.
Does your house in Israel have a shelter? Do you have a safe room or a shelter in the house?
Yes, most of the houses in Israel have one. Especially the new ones. I think this is something I never thought about, but when I came to America, I don't remember who I talked to, but about the shelters in homes and houses. And I asked, like, you don't have one? And I was surprised about it, because in Israel, I used to have one in every house, and everyone knows, because the door is different, and you know where this room at. So in the United States, you don't have to worry about it. And in Israel, one of the first things you see when you come into home or house you don't know, you see this shelter. So you know it's there.
That's just something that you instinctively know when you go to someone else's house. Like, I just got to know where that is just in case. Like, that just, you don't even think about it. It just is part of life.
You just know it's there. It's part of life. You don't even realize you notice that. But when I came here, I started to think about it. And I was like, wait, something is different. It's a different world, it's a different state, so maybe they don't really understand, like, what's going on in Israel.
And just to give some context of how often would you hear sirens, would you have to go to these rooms as you were growing up?
So I remember only Tzuk Eitan as the biggest operation. When I was young, it was 2014, so I was like 11 at this time. Since then, I think I'm not sure because I never looked at, like, but I think every other year we have like a big operation in Israel, and it's going between like a week to a month or even like longer, that we need to like stay closer to our homes and be sure there is a shelter next to us and know where is the shelter. Sometimes they stop schools and we have to like stay home and just everything is top around us. So I think it's happened like every other year until now.
This may sound like a strange question because you're talking about going into a safe room and hearing bombs, but I have talked to many of my Israeli friends who tell me that, like, when that happens, they, some of them don't feel scared. They just think it's like part of life. You just, that we're going to go do this. The sirens are going to go off. We're going to be in here for a little bit and then we'll leave. They're not scared. Like, if we heard sirens in America, we would freak out. I mean, it would be frightening. Were you scared when you first went in? And then as the years went on, did it become less scary? What were you feeling when those sirens go off?
Sometimes it's scary, but most of the time when I'm home, it's like really bad to say, but we kind of got used to it.
Yeah.
It's horrible to say, but like in Israel, it's a big thing, but it's not at the same time. So if you're a siren, you go to the shelter, you will be there 10 minutes. And sometimes just life just happens. Just life just continue. And it's, I'm sure here, if you're a siren, you will not know what to do, what's going on, what happened. And in Israel, you just, okay, they sent rockets on our homes. We have good army. We have strong army. We will be safe. Let's go to the shelter, stay there. We will be safe. Nothing will happen. So I think this is the attitude that most of the Israeli lived with until last week.
Right. In 2015, as part of a series of what I believe were called lone wolf operations by the Palestinians, where they encouraged terrorists to go shoot and stab and do whatever they can. In your hometown, there was a stabbing of, I think, 6 people. And I think it was 2015, so maybe a year after that operation that you're talking about. Do you remember that happening? Because your city, largely, you're north of Tel Aviv, right, where you are. So you're not that close to Gaza. You're not that close to the West Bank. You're south of Lebanon, where Hezbollah is. But do you remember that? And was that a scary thing that it's in our hometown?
I remember that because I was at school at the same time, and my best friend uncle was there. Like, was like 10, 15 meters next to the thing. So I remember her parents just called her and like told her what just happened, and her uncle was fine. But it was a big thing for me because it was like the first time I really felt it like really, really close to me. I remember the next week, she didn't come to school at all. She stayed with her family. And although her uncle was fine, totally fine, but it was so scary. So she stayed the whole week at home. And I had tons of like conversation with my parents about what to do if something happened next to me, if I need to do something about it and just run away or take the camera out, or what should I do in this situation. So yeah, I remember that.
It's something no children and no parents should ever have to have that conversation. Did you feel as this started happening, whether it was the bigger operation the year before or these kind of things, did you start to feel fear as you walk around? Or I think one thing we do tend to forget is children are so resilient and they're like, well, this is just normal. Were you still able to go through high school and play your games and not always be thinking about it? Could you just kind of get back to normal life after those conversations?
I think the craziest thing about Israel is that we will feel safe in Israel more than anywhere else in the world. At least me, and I know it about like most of my friends. Here in America, I feel safe, but when I'm Israel, I feel safer all the time. So in Israel, this is my place. I know everyone. I know how everything's supposed to look like. I know this is my people. I know everyone will be there for each other. So I will feel as safe as I can, or I will feel more safe in Israel than anywhere else in the world.
Taking a step back, I have grandparents on my dad's side. They've passed, but they were survivors of the Holocaust, and their entire families were killed in the Holocaust. Do you have relatives, grandparents, great grandparents that were survivors or in the Holocaust?
I don't have survivors in my family. My grandmother's mother was the only one who survived the Holocaust, and she came to Israel right before. So she didn't have anyone from her family, but unfortunately, I didn't know her.
So, but you're saying you had other family that was killed in the Holocaust?
Yeah. So she was the only one who survived and came to Israel.
One of the conversations I remember the most with my dad when I was a kid, just to take a quick aside, when my mom's side, when it was, I think her uncle passed away, or no, when her dad passed away, my dad said to me, "This is the first person in my life that I knew that passed away." And my dad was, I don't know, 50 at the time. I said, "How is that possible?" And he said to me, "Eric, all of my family was killed in the Holocaust. I didn't have family that lived past that." So he didn't have cousins and uncles. And because that's the reality of what the Holocaust meant to Jewish families in the world, just lineages and generations of people that we never got to know. So let's go from that and let's go to Saturday. I'm sure it was a relatively normal Friday for you. Did you go to Shabbat at Hillel on Friday night?
Yeah. I went to Shabbat at Chabad, and I just came home and continued to study. So I studied, I had exam on Saturday morning, so just studied for the exam.
So tell us, how did you find out what had happened?
Okay, I think now I will go to Hebrew, because...
Great.
It's hard, yeah.
Perfect, understood.
אז בשישי פתאום הייתי בטלפון, בדיוק דיברתי עם אמא שלי, ופתאום התחילו אזעקות בכל הארץ, וגם אצלהם בבית. אז כמובן שהם הלכו לממד, ופתחתי חדשות, וראיתי שהתחילו הפצצות בכל הארץ. רוצה לתרגם את זה עכשיו?
So on our Friday night, so it was their Saturday morning, right? She was on the phone with her mother, and while she was on the phone, sirens started all over Israel. So her family needed to go to the safe room. And then Yelden opened the news and started seeing what's happening.
בהתחלה חשבנו שזה עוד סיבוב, עוד מבצע שמתחיל עם הפצצות, אפשר להגיד שגרתי, כמה שאפשר להגיד את זה שגרתי. ואז פתאום התחלנו לשמוע שיש חדירה של מחבלים.
Basically, at the beginning, it just looked like another operation, which is like funny to say that it's like a normal operation of like just rockets being flown from Gaza. But then we started hearing about terrorists like invading the territory of Israel.
ברגע הזה ממש נלחצתי, כי יש לי, זה החג בישראל, אבל יש לי הרבה חברות וחברים שבצבא, כולם בגיל שלי, וחלקם משרתים על הגבול עם עזה.
at that moment, Yelden got really nervous because she knows a lot of people who are currently in the army and her age that are currently serving in the army and that are currently serving at the area of the Gaza Strip.
ישר כתבתי לכולם, ולשמחתי האנשים שאני מכירה, שמאוד מאוד קרובים אליי, לא היו בבסיס, הם היו בבית לחג. והתחילו לשמוע שחדרו לקיבוצים וליישובים, ואף אחד לא יודע מה קורה.
So what I forgot to mention before, it was a holiday, Simchat Torah. And so automatically Yelden wrote to all her closest friends to see what they're doing. And luckily, all of them answered that they're okay. But then we started hearing that the terrorists started invading kibbutzim and villages around the strip.
And you know that was a balagan. מאוד מאוד גדול בארץ, אף אחד לא הבין מה קורה, היו מלא דיווחים שנכנסים לקיבוצים, שרוצחים אנשים, שהתחילו לחטוף אנשים, שעושים דברים מזעזעים, והתחילו לעלות סרטונים של טרוריסטים בקיבוצים ישראלים, תרגישי חופשי להוסיף.
She started hearing that basically the terrorists are invading the kibbutzim, the villages, and they start basically murdering and slaughtering people there. And then videos and photos started to show up on social media, and there was just one big balagan, as Yerdan said, just one big chaos.
הייתי צמודה לחדשות כל הלילה. אני חושבת שכל הישראלים שלא היו בארץ, וגם אלה שהיו בארץ היו צמודים לחדשות, ורצו לדעת מה קורה עם הקרובים שלהם, והמון חברים שלי, בני משפחה שלהם וחברים שלהם, והפסיקו לענות, או שהתקשרו לצבא ולקוחות הביטחון, שיבואו לעזור להם, שיש ממש שיחות טלפון של חברות שאני מכירה, שניסו לדבר עם חברות, ולראות מה קורה איתם, והדבר היחיד שהם אמרו להם זה, הורגים אותנו, אני אוהבת אתכם, נפרדו ושמעו יריות וסגרו את הטלפון.
She's been like in the news basically throughout the night, and as she knows that a lot of Israelis abroad and Israelis in Israel were like stuck to the news all day just trying to hear anything, and that a lot of friends and family that she knows had people and friends out there that they try to connect with, and there's so many conversations. Now there's these recordings online, but there were so many conversations of people out of the strip calling to their family and friends, and all you can hear on the other side is people asking, call the police, call the army, where are they? They're not here, we're being killed, like call somebody.
זה המשיך ממש יומיים וחצי בערך עד עכשיו,
for about 2.5 days.
אנשים ממש היו במקלטים ובבתים שלהם ושמעו את הטרוריסטים מבחוץ ופשוט התחבאו בממד עד שמישהו יבוא.
People were hiding in their safe rooms and in their like there's, I don't know the name of it in Hebrew, in English, but like under the house, and people were hiding there for hours and up to 2 days just waiting for somebody to come while they hear the terrorists outside like shooting and screaming.
ככה זה המשיך במשך בערך יומיים, ששומעים שיחות טלפון של טרוריסטים מעלים בעצמם, לוקחים טלפונים מאנשים שהם רוצחים ועושים לייבים בפייסבוק או בכל מדיה אפשרית בערך, ומראים איך הם רוצחים אנשים, איך הם שורפים אנשים חיים. אם אנשים לא פתחו את הבית, הם שורפו את הבית פשוט שאנשים מתוכו.
There's a lot of like horror shown in the media that basically terrorists took hostages' phones, or people like that they invaded their house, they took their phones and basically live streamed on Facebook, or just filmed and sent to the families like of the terrorists killing those innocent people in Israel. And if they couldn't, if the terrorists couldn't enter the safe room, then they just set the house on fire.
ונוסף לכל זה הייתה גם מסיבה בדרום.
In addition to all that, there was also the party in the south.
Did you have friends? Did you know anybody that was at that party, that was at that festival?
I know like two people, but I have good, really good friend here that he here at IU, and she had like maybe 10 people she grew up with, and they all didn't came back, so they all didn't come back. So I try to be with her as much as possible. And
what did you, I know it's almost impossible to answer this, but when you started, the sirens are one thing because you've heard those before, but then it quickly turned into something else. What did it do to you? What were you feeling when you're this far away and just seeing social media reports, talking to your family, trying to get your friends, texting? What was going on inside you?
הדבר הראשון שרציתי לעשות זה לעלות על מטוס חזרה לארץ ולהיות.
The first thing she wanted to do is to go back, to go on a plane and go back home to Israel.
בחיים לא חוויתי דבר כזה מפחיד, ואין אפילו מילים איך לתאר את זה. אני לא בן אדם שבוכה הרבה, בטח לא ליד אנשים שהם לא המשפחה שלי, או ממש אולי 3 חברות הכי טובות שלי, ופשוט התפרקתי פה, ועוד אני אחת שלא הייתי שם, לא הייתי בקיבוצים האלה, ולא הייתי בשום מקום שקרוב, וידעתי שהמשפחה שלי בטוחה, ופשוט התפרקתי פה. באמת, נראה לי שבכיתי כמו שלא בכיתי בחיי, וכולי רעדתי כל הלילה.
Yelden says that she never felt a fear like she felt. She never felt like this ever. She's not a person who cries. She rarely cries, and if she cries, it's only in front of her closest family and friends. And she said she just sobbed and like completely broken down. And the people around you, you said your friends around you were there to support you, right?
I'm living with another Israeli here, okay, and a teammate. So we both felt the same thing. We both tried to call everyone we know to make sure they're safe.
Even though he's not from the area of the Strip of Gaza, like it's not that she ever lived there, but it didn't matter. Like even though her family was safe, it was just so devastating to hear and see what's happening.
So, נראה לי שעד עכשיו, כל פעם שאני מדברת על זה, גם עכשיו, אני קצת רועדת. זה משהו שלא, אני לא חושבת שאיזשהו בן אדם בעולם יכול להכיל, להסביר במילים, או
every time she talks about it, she's still like, even now she's shaken.
Yeah.
She doesn't think that anybody can grasp or hold within this, like this thing that happened. Like nobody can really capture it.
Yarden, you said before, you made mention of it, that when you're in Israel, you feel safe, even with the rockets and the sirens and the safe rooms. But you said before, until Saturday, until that. Is that, and I'm not getting into politics at all. I don't want to talk about the government and all that. That's not what I'm talking about. But just that feeling of Israel is your home. That's where you felt safe. And while rockets would come, you didn't have to worry about people busting into your house. Is that the scariest thing of this, that that you just feel unsettled now about your home?
אני חושבת שיש לנו צבא חזק שאחרי המלחמה הזאת תיגמר ואנחנו ננצח בה. אני חושבת שכל מה שאנשים חשבו עד עכשיו, או כל הצורת חיים או הדרך מחשבה תשתנה. אני עדיין חושבת שהמקום שאני מרגישה בו הכי בטוחה ימשיך להיות ישראל, וזה לא ישנה את זה.
We have a strong army. And this war will end and the army will win. We will win. Obviously, nothing will remain the same, right, after this war. But Israel is still the safest place for her.
One more thing. התמיכה שהעם שלנו מראה כל פעם שדבר כזה קורה, בטח הפעם, הדבר הנורא שקרה, כל העם ממש התגייס לעזור אחד לשני, זה לשלוח אוכל וציוד ולארח משפחות מהדרום, וכל דבר שבאמת צריך העם שלנו באמת שם.
Yeah, one of the strongest things that you see now is the support of our people, that you see very, 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 very strong and very like a proud nation, that you see how they help, and like the families from the south who doesn't have a house now, that like there's so many people just volunteering to give them home, and in general, right, like the mental support and the physical support, and I'll add the financial support.
Jordan, you had said right before we started recording, when we thanked you for doing this, that you felt it was important. And I just wanted to give you the opportunity as to why is it important for people here in the United States, Gentiles like myself, why is it important that we know what's going on there?
אני חושבת שמה שקורה עכשיו זה לא עניין פוליטי, וזה לא עניין של איזשהו קונפליקט בין מדינות, זה עניין של בני אדם, להיות אנושי ולראות מה קורה שם באמת, וכולם צריכים לדעת באמת באמת מה קורה בישראל, ולא לשמוע את זה דרך ארגוני טרור כאלה ואחרים, או להצדיק אותם מבלי להבין מה קורה. ואני חושבת שהאירוע הזה שונה.
I think it's not about politics right now, and it's not about one conflict or another, it's about people, and it's very important for especially like the Americans to hear that it's about the people, it's not, and they need to hear the truth from the people and not from different terror groups that shift the truth.
Jordan, how do you go from the news that you get on Saturday and Sunday and constantly texting your friends? Because it's not like you text them one time, they get back to you, and that's it. This is every day, your friends that are in the army, they're in it. How do you go from that to going to class and taking tests and going to practice? And how are you able to just get through the day?
זה היה קשה מאוד, מאוד. זה עדיין קשה להמשיך פה בחיים, כאילו, כל רגיל ולא קרה כלום, ולהמשיך בלימודים ולהגיע לאימון ולהתאמן, כי זה מה שצריך לעשות. אבל קיבלתי המון המון תמיכה, גם מהמאמנים, גם מהשחקניות, גם האנשים מסביב, מחברים פה באוניברסיטה שעברו אותו, בדיוק מה שאני עברתי, גם הרבה מרצים באוניברסיטה מאוד ניסו להיות שם בשבילי ולעזור והבינו את המצב.
So it was hard, very hard, to kind of like take a pause and go back to class or to practice and normal life, But Yelden got a lot of support, whether it's from her teammates or from her friends who understand exactly what she's going through, or for friends who doesn't understand what she's going through and still give a lot of support. The staff of the university was really, really great supporting. Same goes for the professors and the
coaches.
The coaches, yeah.
One of the things we know about Terry Moran and your team is, and that program, is it is a family. How great has Terry been, Coach Moran, I should say, and just that, having that support system where you know you've got this, it's not the same as your family in Israel, but it's your Hoosier family. How important has that been for you to be able to lean on them?
On Saturday morning, I had my exam. So I just, it was like really early in the morning. I know my coaches knew about everything happened. So they all just tried to like text me and reach out to me and my teammates too. I kind of didn't answer and responded to anyone at that point. I was focused about talking to my family, my friends. Everyone called back to the army. So I wanted to make sure everyone is safe and I wanted just to talk with them and keep up with the news. So I didn't respond to anyone before the exam. I went to the exam. I never did exam so fast. I just wanted to go back to my phone. So after the exam, Coach Moran called me. And she is there for me. I know for everything, but this was a big moment that I totally broke down and broke apart. So it was a lot to me to understand. She had my back. She has my back and she's there for me. And she totally understood that I can't really answer and respond to everyone. And she took care of, like, make sure no one is, like, get hurt for me not responding them. And until now, like, all the time, my coaches, my teammates, like, texting me every other hour, like, are you fine? Are you good? What's going on with you? Is your family safe? The amount of time my coaches and my teammates asked me if my family is safe, I can't even count them. Like, it's so helpful when they're there for me. They ask me what I want to do from now on, and they will totally understand, like, whatever I want to do, whatever I need, they're there for me. They asked me, like, Israeli shirts to just show support. My coach came with Israel shirt to one of the practices. Coach Red came with one. So it just, you know, from like watching the news and talking with friends who are there in dangerous situations, and like it just like put a smile on my face, even if for like a second, to understand that I'm in a good place. They are there for me and they will stay there for me in these difficult times.
Well, Yarden, I want to just say one thing before we wrap up. Thank you for giving us this time, but I do want to just say a thank you to Ronnie who helped us here, and I also do want to say, you know, Ronnie's Israeli as well, and Ronnie was touched by this in a very direct way. Ronnie, you had a couple friends at the music festival.
Yeah. Yes. One didn't come back. And there are a couple friends they're from my neighborhood. I grew up in Netanya, and they are now considered missing from one of the villages. So we're waiting to hear about Niv and Nirel. So yeah.
Well, we will send prayers and thoughts, of course. Yarden, our heart breaks for your fellow countrymen, and there just aren't words to say to make any of this better. But you've got your Hoosier teammates and coaches there to support you, and you've got a whole hell of a lot of people from coast to coast and across the globe that are supporting you and caring about you and your family and your friends, and want this to end and end as quickly as possible, and want shalom, peace for Israel and for all innocent people. You can't live like this. And our heart breaks for you. And I can't thank you enough for coming on here. Is there anything, any last message you want to just send to Hoosier Nation who's listening to this?
Stand with the good. It's a good against the evil. So stand with the good, with the humanity. And hopefully it will... This is the last time it's going to happen in the world, and everyone will understand that we need to stand with the good.
Yarden, thank you so much. We will, God willing, see you in Bloomington soon. We're going to come to some games, and we're going to see you in Stanford. You guys come and play Stanford. Ward and I will be bringing our families there. And I'm going to try to break out my Israeli gear as well when we come to that game. Thank you so much, Yarden. Ronnie, thank you so much. Ward, you want to say anything to take us out here?
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me. And thank you, Ronnie. I know how hard it is to hear and say. And
thank you for sharing and opening the world of other people who wouldn't necessarily know about what's happening. So.
And we'll continue to say prayers for both of your families and friends of friends, that they do come back from the end of this. And especially your family and friends, Yarden, that are in the military, that are standing with good and fighting for good right now. And we know they will prevail. And let's get them home safe.
Amen.
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 I got nothing smart to say. Stand with good. Yeah, man. I got to tell you, though, the part that I'm going to try to focus on is her saying that her teammates, her coaches, the people in Indiana, the support that she gets, Coach Rhett coming in wearing an Israeli shirt for practice, and that put a smile on her face for even a second in the midst of what this is. God bless her. God bless Israel. God bless the coaches and her teammates, and God bless everybody that is standing with good.
Yeah, I mean, there's never been a more important time to stand behind an Indiana Hoosier. And so, yeah. Whatever you can do, whatever prayers, you know, you see her walk in a class, leaving a practice, you know, clearly it matters a lot.
Tell her shalom. If you see her, say shalom to Yarden. Shalom in Hebrew means hello, it means goodbye, and it means peace. That's what the word shalom means. Yeah, I got nothing else.
Shalom.
Shalom, Ward.
How powerful is Cox Internet? Powerful enough to let your band members in Vegas, Phoenix, and Rhode Island jam like you're all in the same garage. Get gig speeds powered by fiber from Cox. It's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, always building better. Download speeds up to 1 gigabit per second. Cox Internet is connected to the premises via coaxial connection. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms and other restrictions may apply.